Australian government is playing down the latest move from China as the deep freeze between Beijing and Canberra continues. The Chinese government has announced it's indefinitely suspending all activities under the China-Australia Strategic Economic Dialogue. It's a symbolic move given the dialogue hasn't met since 2017, but experts fear it could still have an impact. I spoke to our foreign affairs correspondent Stephen Jedgetts a short time ago. What is this economic dialogue exactly? And has China's government explained why it's suspended it?
Yes. Well, the dialogue is basically part of a series of high-level bilateral talks that were designed to facilitate cooperation between Australia and China. Now, they were led by pretty senior ministers, and they were basically meant to galvanise both political systems to encourage greater economic cooperation and alignment. But these talks were actually only short-lived. Their shelf life wasn't long. They only ran for a few years during those really happy halcyon days of the Australia-China relationship. So the first was back in 2014. The second was in 2015. The last was actually held in 2017 when the then Trade Minister, Steve Chobo, travelled to Beijing. But since then, the relationship between Australia and China, of course, has declined pretty precipitously. And there's been no dialogues since 2017. It's effectively been put on ice. But it was only yesterday that China actually formally suspended it and made the announcement that it was doing so, saying it was a response to Australia's, quote, insane suppression of cooperation and exchanges with China. Now, that seems to be a pretty clear reference to Australia's decision to tear up two Belt and Road agreements between China and Victoria not long ago. So it's been made pretty clear there that this is a tit-for-tat response. And that move clearly frustrated Beijing, and that move is clearly in response to it.
Stephen, if it's a continuation of the freezing of relations, does this particular decision matter? Will it have any impact on trade?
Well, it certainly won't have any immediate impact, after all, given the last talks were 4 years ago. It's not like they were encouraging a whole lot of cooperation recently. And the government certainly privately is basically shrugging it off. Now, some analysts agree with this. They say that China has essentially run out of options, given it's already placed sanctions against practically all major Australian exports that it can without damaging its own economy. And therefore, by going, as some put it, thermonuclear in 2020, China has few options left. Hence, it's reduced to symbolic gestures like this, nixing talks that were already effectively dead in the water. Others, though, disagree with that analysis. They say, yes, sure, at the moment it might not have an immediate impact, but they worry that it will have some sort of impact down the line because, they argue, many businesses in China take their cues from the centre, from Beijing, and the fact that this formal displeasure has been expressed, the fact that these talks have formally been suspended, will send a very clear message, not just to businesses, but also Chinese consumers, that they shouldn't look to Australia for products, that they should look elsewhere. So some business groups in particular worry that over the medium to long term, this will have an impact on trade.
And more broadly, there's been a noticeably more hawkish tone on China emanating from parts of Canberra over the last few weeks. What's behind that shift?
It's difficult to say for sure, but it is true that the tone is noticeably more hawkish and at times even alarmist recently. We saw Mike Pezzullo, the Home Affairs Secretary, a pretty powerful senior official, warning in a message to staff that, quote, the drums of war were beating. And that was taken very widely as a warning that the prospects of conflict with China, specifically in the Taiwan Strait, were going up. We've also had the Defence Minister, Peter Dutton, making it pretty clear that he believes that Australians are behind the government's fairly muscular stance on China and that he is not going to be taking a backward step. Now, the government isn't, I don't think, arguing here that war is inevitable, and I certainly don't think there's a rush for war in Canberra. There's a pretty keen awareness that a war, a hot war with China and the US drawing in Australia would be an absolute catastrophe, not just for the region but for the world. And we also shouldn't pretend that we're a major player here. After all, what happens in the Taiwan Strait really does come down to decisions made in Beijing, in Taipei and in Washington rather than in Canberra. But you do get a sense that the government's unease about China's increasingly aggressive forays into Taiwan's airspace and waters. You know, this unease has long been privately expressed. It's now increasingly being publicly expressed. And the result is that the public narrative around China is noticeably more alarmist and sometimes overheated. Let's take a listen to this question that was thrown almost casually to Peter Dutton, the defence minister, on Breakfast TV this morning, invoking a question of whether Australia might even go to war with China.
How long are you in quarantine for? Because it seems to me like every day that goes past, we're moving a day closer to going to war with China. Are you going to be able to fight this war from your bunker there in Brizzy?
I'm not in quarantine. I'm at the Eden Sill Hotel, one of the fine establishments in my electorate. We've got a meeting here today. There's a bar behind me, Carl. I'm not here from last night.
You've got all the essentials.
Because that's the... You're happy? So, yeah, there's a good stock behind the bar there. So I'm here for a meeting this morning on some road funding announcements, et cetera. So I'm pretty good. And there is no war with China, just to tail off your question. Yeah. And yes, Richard, there was irony in that question.
Defence Minister Peter Dutton speaking on Channel 9 this morning, and before him, our Foreign Affairs correspondent Stephen Jedgetts.